So you got to shorten the sight line, and how do you hide the monster? That is haunted house design. And better you are at doing that, better the effectiveness of the haunted house is.
Welcome to Haunt Topic Radio, the podcast for haunters by haunters. These are our scary visions.
Welcome back to another episode of Haunt Topic Radio. In this episode, we talk to Leonard Pickle. If you've been around the haunt industry for a few years, you probably run into Leonard. He is the mastermind behind HauntCon, the haunt convention that goes around the United States to different haunts, different venues, and sets up and tours local haunted attractions and draws in a local crowd. Gives everybody kind of a chance to experience a haunt convention, because some people can't make it out to the big shows. So Leonard is behind that. He started Chicago Frights. Year one was last year, which is in Chicago. And not only does Leonard fill us in on the what's new with the conventions coming up in Chicago this year in July, and HauntCon 2017 in Nashville, Tennessee in 2017. He also shares a little bit of his wisdom with us on some cool design tips and common mistakes a lot of haunters make when they design their attractions. So you won't want to miss that. Now, Chicago Frights is coming up. It is in Chicago, Illinois. Actually, Orland Park, Illinois. July 29th through the 31st. At the Giorgio's Quality Inn and Suites and Convention Center. Find out more about Chicago Frights, chicagofrights.com. And HauntCon 2017, which will be January 27th through January 29th. Nashville, Tennessee, Sheraton Music City Hotel and Conference Center. And of course, that is HauntCon.com. And all music in this podcast is by The Night Keep and their CD Heretica. We also include Seed 7 of the narrative story that we've been playing over the last, well, I guess this is Season 7, so last 6-7 podcasts. So go back and check out the story. I know you loyal listeners were at one time used to 3 episodes a month from us, and I know that I've cut it down to about 1 a month now. In our last podcast, we mentioned 10 other podcasts you guys can listen to. That'll fill in the gaps. When you're not hearing a show from us, you can go listen to one of our brothers and sisters and check out their casts as well. We're trying to do a quality over quantity on our shows. Not only is this podcast a passion for mine, so is my haunted attraction that I do for a business. Working on this membership site for haunters. And of course, there's always that thing that's called life with your family and your kids and summertime. And now I just started going back out to the haunt again, every day off and every Sunday. So you know how it is, guys. Just trying to squeeze it all in. So if you need more to listen to than 1 a month, then go back to our collections. I think this is, we're in our low 100s of episodes, so go way back, and a lot of the stuff is relevant today. Yes, we do talk about some conventions and shows, but you'll pick up little nuggets along the way. So at your workshop, look us up at HauntTopic.com, go to our archives or your favorite podcasting player on your app. You have an app on your smartphone, or if you have the iTunes podcasting app, we're on Stitcher, or on Google Play. So if you're Android or iPhone, just type in Haunt Topic Radio and we should pop up. Push subscribe and you'll get all of our episodes straight to your phone. So enough about me, enough about Haunt Topic. Let's dive into the interview with Leonard Pickle from Chicago Frights and HauntCon. So tonight we have Leonard Pickle on from, he's a man from behind HauntCon and Chicago Frights and is it Hauntrepreneurs.com?
Yep.
And, well, tonight we're going to be talking to Leonard about Chicago Frights coming up. Leonard, can you tell us the location and dates and what Chicago Frights is all about?
Chicago Frights is going to be July 29th through the 31st, Orland Park. It's outside of Chicago. It's the Giorgio's Inn and Suites and Conference Center. We actually had to move out of the convention center, the hotel that we were in last year. We didn't have enough room for all the vendors. So we are we're expanding and looking forward to a great 2 days of education and 3 days of trade show.
Why, how does Chicago Fright differ? I know some people out there have been to HauntCon, maybe haven't been to Chicago Frights. How they differ?
HauntCon is really designed to be an early show. It's January. It's really designed to be, you know, for people that are in the business, that are looking to get in the business. They either have a haunt and they want to figure out how to make more money with it, or how to do what they do better, quicker, easier, or cheaper. Has 50 hours of education. It's a three-day show. There's lots of haunt tours that are part of the package. In fact, we're really excited about Nashville. We've got three different tours that we're doing in Nashville and at HauntCon, which is going to be in January 26th to 30th at the Sheraton Nashville Airport. And shows that the haunts are awesome. Hell House, it's the mass haunted house, very high detail, incredible show. And a Saturday night tour that's going to be, and then the last night is going to be at Slaughterhouse, which is another mass show. For some reason, all the haunts in Nashville are just huge, you know, 10, 20, 30,000.
And they've been around a while too, haven't they?
They have been, yeah. And the Slaughterhouse is one of the longest running show in Nashville. And then Hell House actually has several different locations in the city. And Nashville Nightmare is really a high detail, very creative. And again, they're just huge. The shows are just massive. It's really, really an interesting model. But yeah, we're excited about that and excited about having everybody come out to Nashville in January. The Chicago Fright Tours are going to be a little bit different than we've handled in the past. There's several different haunted houses that we're negotiating with, really just to open up. You know, last year we realized that a lot of the people that came to the Chicago Frights were local or within a couple hours drive, 4 hours drive. So they either had a car or they were local enough to go see the haunt tours by themselves. So we're negotiating, or not really negotiating, we're just promoting other haunts in the market that are going to open up that weekend. So there will be some haunt tours. They're not going to be, you don't have to buy them through HauntCon. You can just decide which haunt you want to go to and go do that instead of signing up for the show. But it has 2 days, two full days of education. Again, all the education, HauntCon and Chicago Frights, included in the price of the show. So you're not being nickel and dime for seminars that might be great or might not be great. Our education is always top notch. We love our education. We're always really talking highly of our education, and it's all included in the price of the show. So you don't have to pay, you know, $60 or $80 per seminar. The whole weekend is $75 at Chicago Frights, and I think it's $120 or $125 at HauntCon. And you get, you know, access to 50 hours of education that doesn't cost you any additional fee. And of course, our, you know, costume party that we have at Chicago Frights and our and costume ball we have at HauntCon. It's a great opportunity for people to get into costume and party and have a good time. That, you know, that was the reason most of us got in the industry, was to get into costume and scare some people. But all of us are working in October. We don't have an opportunity to party for Halloween like we used to. So both Chicago Frights and HauntCon are a great opportunity to do that. Chicago Frights is really geared towards actors. We have a lot of actor seminars, actor training seminars. The concept being that we want the haunts in that market or from outside that to bring their actors in, so we can help them get trained up for the season. You know, so lots of makeup and lots of actor training. But we also have several people that have offered to do business seminars for us. So it's not just a haunt fan, you know, level show. It's got some how to get started stuff, business plans, as well as some marketing stuff. So it's the kind of stuff, you know, we tell our vendors in Chicago Frights that the good stuff to sell, so cash to go. And, you know, those last things like fog and interest and that kind of stuff that you're going to need, you know, later in the season, since it shows in July.
So how is the costume ball?
It's looking great. I mean, it was something that was really well received last year, and we're looking forward to a good time. You know, we fly in our DJ because he's the best in the business for getting everybody up and having a good time. And it's a great opportunity for people to enjoy getting in costume and partying instead of having to work like we do in October. It's the Froggies is sponsoring the beer again for this year, and yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
What kind of Is there any, like, costume contests, prizes, stuff like that?
You know, the haunted house industry is so competitive anyway that we really have shied away from doing any kind of a contest, you know, because it's really hard to, it's so hard to judge, and you don't know whether the guy built the thing himself or he bought it, you know, or where he got the idea or whatever. So we really kind of shied away because no matter who wins a costume contest, somebody's off. And that's just not,
right.
And that's not the way I think it'd be. So we've shied away from a contest. However, we had a very, very dear friend of ours die last year, right in, at the end of the year. And so at HauntCon for the first time, we did do a memorial presentation to, because he was, his name was Chris Sylvia, and he was wheelchair bound. But he came up with the most creative costumes imaginable, you know, to wrap around that wheelchair. You know, one year he was a Zoltar, you know, booth that was on wheels, and you put a quarter in, and a little card would come out and tell you your fortune. You know, one year he was an ice cream vendor. He was rolling around and had an ice cream, you know, a box in the front of it, and he's handing out actual ice cream to people. One year he was, when we were in Orlando, he actually built a doom buggy out of foam and wrapped that around himself, and he was in a, you know, he was dressed like a little kid with the Mickey Mouse ears, and there was even a ghost over one shoulder, and he got two girls. He actually costumes the maids or whatever they are at the Haunted Mansion. You know, just so incredibly creative. And he passed away, you know, way he wasn't even 50 years old and died, you know, suddenly. So we've been doing this memorial, you know, most creative costume, you know, really just kind of a subjective thing that it's not really even a contest. We just kind of pick somebody that we think did a great job and put in the extra effort. And we did that at HauntCon, and we'll do it again at Chicago Frights, just to really pay, you know, some homage to Chris, who was really, really was just incredible, incredible talent. Such a loss. We really miss him. My wife and I were even talking about him earlier today, just out of the blue. He would have just turned 50 something.
Yeah, I wish I had a chance to meet him.
Yeah, that would have been great. Just the videos and the presentation and stuff that you guys had at HauntCon was really good, and I think you guys did a really good memorial to him. And I saw more than a couple of eyes that were leaking some sort of liquid. I don't know what it was. It probably wasn't alcohol, but they were there was a few tears there, and it was very touching.
You know, we're all getting to that age where, you know, friends start passing away. I'm already older than Jeannie's dad was when he died, so that's something that's coming for all of us. And the older you get, more friends that you have to pass away, and it's you know, it just lends itself more to getting out to as many shows as you can and seeing these people that you don't see very often, because it's, you have no idea whether you're ever going to see them again or not.
Exactly, and it's definitely hanging around with a group of haunters, like, you know, at HauntCon or Chicago Frights, it's going to be, you're going to be remembered, and people will remember you, because it's such a great crowd, and there's so many great people that we met there. Had a lot of fun there. So sorry I can't go to Chicago Frights this year, but maybe we'll do that one next year.
Yeah, we'll look forward to having you at HauntCon. And that's the greatest thing about conventions is meeting up with people and networking people. We've had people that have met at HauntCon that have gotten married. We've had people that have met at HauntCon that have, you know, gone into business together and opened haunts together. It's just a huge opportunity of networking that you have advantage of. And you know, Brian was mentioning earlier that how well the hospitality suite works for that function, even though it might make him miss an early seminar or two.
They have the tendency to do that, don't they?
There's a lot of good memories in that room.
Can you remember them though, Brian?
Yes, we had jelly beans one night. I remember the jelly beans.
And after that, you don't remember too much.
Not really.
So based on the attendance, what kind of a percentage of the attendees actually go to the costume parties? Is it a really high percentage?
You know, it's close to 50%. It's not as high as we'd like for, you know, there's other things to do, and especially with the escape game. You know, a lot of people will do the education all day long and disappear at night, head off to do an escape game or go see a haunt or, you know, do some other stuff that's in town. And some people always schedule their vacation around HauntCon. They'll, you know, get in the car and drive and see a bunch of stuff on the way and attend HauntCon and drive back and, you know, see, just go be a tourist for the, you know, on the way home. So it's it's not as high as we'd like for it to be. I mean, I really think that people should participate because it really is a fun time, you know. But you know, guys aren't into, and the haunted house industry is full of guys, and they're not all that excited about dancing. You know, we always try to beef up the female population so that draw the guys in, but. And, you know, and a lot of people will show up and decide to go last minute and not have a costume. It's fine. It's not required to have a costume. But it's kind of funny to see the guys in street clothes standing around and watching girls dance. So that didn't happen in my day. In my day, you had to ask the girls to dance or nobody danced. So it's a little bit of a problem now.
If anybody does not like to dance, this is the best time to do it because you're in a costume and nobody cares, guys. Get your ass out on the dance floor and have a good time, you know?
And if you never take your mask off, no one will ever know who it was.
That's the crazy thing about the costume party. People walk up to me and they'll start talking to me and it's just like, you know, dude, I, you know, you seem to be my best friend, but I have no earthly idea who the hell you are. You have to either tell me or take off the mask because I have no idea who you are. It's kind of funny. Once people put that, you know, that veil of masquerade in front of them, that it doesn't dawn on them that everybody out there doesn't know who they are. But it's fun. It's a great opportunity to have a time. And you know, it's the social event on the haunting calendar. And now there's two of them.
Do you want more Halloween Haunted House and Haunter goodness? Do you want the new episodes of Haunt Topic Radio delivered straight to your inbox? Do you want it all for free? Go to haunttopic.com/subscribe. Give us your email address and we will start sending you some treats without the tricks. Get your Halloween and Haunted House fix at haunttopic.com/subscribe.
So let her kind of give us a little, maybe a little outline of Chicago Frights from day one through the weekend. Just pick up some highlights that you really like and things that you're looking forward to.
The trade show opens on Friday, so we have a little brief opportunity for the vendors to get a preview on Friday night for the show opens in earnest on Saturday morning. And then Friday night there will be some haunt tours. John LaFlamboy has a movie that he's done, so we're going to have a movie viewing that night as well. So if you're not going to go to a haunt, got an opportunity to do a movie. And then there's a bar that's right in the parking lot of the hotel that we're doing some karaoke at. So that'll be fun for Friday night. Saturday night is the costume party. And then there will also be some tours on Sunday night after the garage sale. You know, the haunted garage sale is such a huge part of HauntCon that we're going to bring it to Chicago Frights. It's a great opportunity to pick up some free stuff and to get rid of some stuff pick up some cheap stuff and get rid of some stuff that you're not using and would like to swap out. In fact, the biggest problem we have with the garage sale is that as they're unloading stuff and loading it into the building, a lot of stuff changes hands before it ever gets to the show floor. So we have to kind of poo-poo that and try to keep people from just swapping stuff in the parking lot and disappearing without ever making it to the garage. So then the education and the trade show starts on Saturday morning, runs all day, and on Sunday morning runs all day. Saturday we'll have a zombie walk. It'll go to several bars that are in the area. That's being planned by a local zombie walk person. And then we'll have a pretty good sized Hirsch rally on Sunday as well. So it's some of the stuff that we've stopped doing at HauntCon because it was hard to do when we were moving around to different locations. We found a good home in Chicago, and there are like 80 different haunted houses in the Chicago Metroplex. Plenty of people from, and it's a great opportunity for vendors to get rid of some last minute stuff that they're concerned isn't going to go online. And it's a great opportunity for people to pick up some last minute stuff that maybe even at a bargain because it's late in the season. But it's just a great model. We're really looking forward to to having a show that stays in the same place. Since Hong Kong moves to a different city every year, it's kind of stayed the same size. It hasn't really grown a lot. But we're already looking at bigger numbers in Chicago than we had last year. So we're looking forward to that show just, continuing to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Because this will be year two, correct?
Yes. Yep, year two, and we've already outgrown the first hotel. We're about to outgrow the second hotel, so I'm already looking for a larger space for year three.
Excellent. And I see something about a zombie walk.
Yeah, that's going to be on Saturday, and the Hirsch rally is on Sunday. They'll just start off at a hotel and then hit three or four bars on the way around the local area. Last year it was a little bit, we did the same thing last year. It was a little bit weird last year because there wasn't a lot of stuff near that hotel. But this one is right in the middle on a main drag. So there's a lot of stuff. It'll get a lot more visibility, people driving by too. So that'll be fun.
I just ran down some of your education tracks, and you kind of break it down like you do at HauntCon, right? So you have there's an actor training business track and a creative track, demo tech presentations, hands-on workshops.
Yeah, we're doing a corpseification workshop to teach you how to take a plastic skull and turn it into a corpse, that you can then take the techniques and go and do that with a full skeleton. Several different people that are doing actor training classes, and we've got some more that we haven't put up there yet. We're still trying to get some stuff, some descriptions and stuff finalized, but it's Joe Jensen, one of the icons of early haunting, dear friend of mine, has agreed to do some sessions. I haven't gotten topping him yet, so we haven't put that on there. It was huge. Even John LaFlamboy, who is a great actor trainer himself, was just amazed and really complimentary on the stuff that Joe was teaching everybody in the class. So it's going to be a good opportunity for people to, for haunts to come. And, it's open to the general public. We're going to do a lot of local advertising to drive, local people that are just Halloween lovers and haunted house lovers to the show. So it gives haunts an opportunity to buy a booth and solicit makeup people and actors. We even talked to last year, we even had somebody that was kind of setting up auditions for actors at the show so they could to add to the quality of their acting troupe by pulling people in that love Halloween, love makeup, and love scaring people.
You got quite a few good speakers too. Dr. Terrorize.
Yeah, he's kind of a staple. Scott Swenson, who is when Busch Gardens, he really was the original creative director for Busch Gardens Hall of Scream in Tampa, and he's since left that, and he's doing some just recently done some doing his own kind of a Sleep No More style haunted house that's in Tampa. He's a great speaker, really knows his stuff, he's doing it for a long time and, you know, really at a high level. He'll be doing his seminar. I haven't even put up the seminars that I'm thinking about doing this year. I'm probably going to do maybe a do's and don'ts of haunted house design. I've been so many years, I've been, you know, walking around and, or going to haunted houses all over the country and seeing stuff that people just keep on doing and it just doesn't work. So I've kind of put all that stuff into a seminar. The other thing that I've been thinking about doing that I haven't together yet is a seminar on how to build a haunted house. You know, there's lots of seminars on how to get started. There's lots of seminars on, you know, how to decorate a haunted house. But I'm thinking about doing something on, you know, literally on how to build a haunted house. What I feel like best panel design is, you know, how do you get past electrical, you know, how the electrical should be run on the haunted house, keep it up to code. You know, how do you get around having red exit signs over every door all over the place? There's a lot of those little tricks that I've picked up over the years that I, you know, do for my clients that are coming to me for haunted house design. And I've been thinking about putting that together for a seminar. I mean, I may do that for Chicago. It'll be a great opportunity to it's really kind of away from the direction that we thought Chicago Frights would go. But to be honest with you, it takes so long to get a haunted house up off the ground and going that starting in, you know, July of the year before you're planning on opening really is not a bad idea, because it really does take a long time. I've had clients come to me or not really even clients, just people call up and tell me that it's taken them almost a year just to get a building permit to go in and start construction on the haunt. And if you don't, you know, if you're not prepared to that, it could really break your back. You might even miss the first season that you may have even already paid for advertising and stuff, or if it takes you a year to get a permit.
Wow, that's insane, taking that long just to get the permit to make them tax money, right?
Right. Well, you know, people that are building department, fire department people, when you say the word haunted house to them, all they see is dead burnt bodies. So they tend to try to throw the book at you and really, you know, stress, make sure that you know what you're getting into. You know, you want to be safe. You know, if you hurt somebody, you're going to be just as liable as the fire department.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you know, they are more strict than they need to be. When I did the design for the Morris Costumes haunted house in Charlotte, we applied for a permit in April and got permit in August, I think. So it took us and what happened is every time they found something that they didn't understand, it wasn't even something that was wrong. It was just something that they misunderstood. They'd kick it out of the system, and by the time I fixed the drawings and sent it back to them, you know, then I'd get back at the end of the line. Because Charlotte was growing at the time, it took them a long time to look at it, and then they'd find something else. And I don't understand this, and kick it back out. You know, and luckily I felt comfortable enough about what I was doing that when they handed me, when they finally did give me my building permit, I said, okay, yeah, thanks, that's great. Now can I call for final inspection? We had already built things. We knew what we were doing. it wasn't like we just had to convince them that we were doing. So luckily we were still able to open, but the average person can't do that. You know, that's a lot of risk unless they know what they're doing. So I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it take a long time to permit. And, and until you have the permit, you're not really supposed to start building. So you have to be careful.
Yeah, right. There's still the industries outside of our own industry that just don't understand what we do. Do anything, like, does the fire department or that sort of thing ever get involved in the industry? Like, do they come to these trade shows or any of that sort of stuff?
We actually had a guy at HauntCon that was a local building inspector that came in and did, a code compliance seminar. Trying to remember, it seems like we may have had somebody last year at Chicago Frights that was the same way. I need to call them and have them come back. But, you know, it's really not that big of a problem. You know, once, if you know the rules, people call me up and they say, well, what about this? And I say, well, have you read the haunted house rule book? They said, there's a haunted house rule book? Yeah. Don't know the rules, you're not going to be able to win the game. So, but it's, you know, it's really just a code book. I mean, you have to read the codes and understand them and know what's required. If you don't read the code book, I've gone to a building department and they told me, you know, as I submitted my drawing, they said, okay, you're going to one person, one actor in front of and one actor behind every 10 people going through the haunted house. They call them a pusher and a puller. And it was just like, what? So, yep, that's how we do haunted houses in our town. You have to have one staff person in the front of and back of every 10 people going through your haunted house. And I was like, well, can you show me where that is in the code book? Because I've never seen it in code book. You know, and I was able to talk them out of it because it's not written down anywhere. But if you didn't know that, you know, if you didn't realize, if you hadn't read the code book and knew what the rules were, then you'd have had to have a pusher and a puller for every 10 people go through your haunted. The staffing alone, that would be bad.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, besides the safety, then it's very important to know your codes. And that way, when you're posed with a question such as, yeah, you need to have this and you know you need to have that, then you have the knowledge and are able to say, really? Show me where it says that.
We fled deeper into the castle, winding up a flight of stairs to find ourselves in an outer parishioner's office. A pipe organ could be heard in the adjoining chapel, as well as a haunting choir of children's voices. I searched the office desk, the various scattered scrolls and parchments. An alchemy lamp stood on the corner, and surprisingly, the magic crystal still sparked to life.
And what of that great beast? Surely he will find us.
Perhaps. The notes mentioned magic wards were placed to bar it access. We can only hope they hold. Best not to linger, but I must search these papers. The scrolls and text were diagrams and intricate designs of the darkest magic. Spells and runes whose meaning I had no fathom, yet some I recognized. These spells were of pain and possession, of summoning demonic hosts, all to create some machinery, a battery of sorts. The machine itself looked to be some malformed joining of a pipe organ with large tuning forks whose resonance was not explained. The most damnable of the designs were depictions of children, notes telling how to withdraw the soul of a child and to use the corpses as a crude power supply. Some children were to be used to sing, others as liquid fuel. Those that were not used were simply discarded to the dungeons below, or reanimated into demonic guards, those whom we had faced in our trek through the castle. Lastly, there was a diagram of some ritualistic arrangement depicted below the foul machine.
Dare I read that, Prelate Encanthio?
No need to trouble yourself, Inquisitor. The writings of a heretic. But I feel we must inspect that damnable music if we are to find the bastards responsible for this blasphemy. We left the room and entered the chapel.
Leonard, you brought up something earlier about that seminar you wanted to do, and you were talking about bad designs that a lot of people make. Can you name three bad design mistakes most people make when they design?
The biggest one to me is, you know, I'll go through a haunted house, and this happens is at Universal Studios as well as it does at any haunted house that I go through around the country, which in October I'll see as many as 200 haunted houses. I scour the countryside looking for great haunts. But you'll go into a haunted house, you'll be going through a haunted house, and you'll walk into this room, and right before you walk into the room, the actor pops out right from around the corner and scares you right in the face of the first person before you actually step into the room. And then you walk into that room, and the room is gorgeous. I mean, it could be a laboratory scene or a library. I mean, it's a huge, very detailed, exciting room. And the actor is just kind of standing there in the room. He's already, you know, kind of scared. You've done a boo scare around the corner. And he really doesn't have anything to do. And, you know, after seeing that over and over and over, it dawned on me that, you know, whatever they had designed in that room to occur, or what was supposed, this guy was supposed to do, wasn't working. And the only scare that he can do is, you know, some kind of a boo around the corner. You know, and from that, and you know, back, and I really, this came up when I was going to haunts back in the 80s. You know, I realized that if that boo scare that's the most effective. So when you design your room design, you know, a lot of people, you know, design from the outside in. They say this is going to be a kitchen. It's going to have, you know, nasty pots and pans. It's going to have stuff, you know, corpses everywhere, you know, and then we're going to get this really cool costume and put this actor in really great makeup and stand him in the middle of the room, and then when people come in, the actor's going to scare them. Well, when you go from that approach, that you, where you don't design in what the scare is going to be before you ever even think about what the set dressing is, you know, you really put a huge burden on that actor to be able to scare anybody. Now, great actors can do it. I mean, a great actor can be in a room like that and still get a great scare. But not all of your actors are great actors. So you have to design from the inside out. You know, what is, form follows, in architecture they say form ever follows function. The function of a haunted house is to scare the crap out of people. So what are you going to do to scare people in this room, then come up with flow of the room on how it's going to, on how the people are, how to force people to go around something to set the scare up for the best possibility of success, and how do you hide the actor? You know, what I've boiled haunted house design into how do you shorten the sight line? How do you twist? You have to shorten the sightline. If you have long, straight hallways, then you can't have groups very close to each other because they can see what's going to happen ahead of them. So you got to shorten the sightline, and how do you hide the monster? That is haunted house design. And better you are at doing that, the better the effectiveness of the haunted house is.
Yeah, that's what we try to do when we designed ours. We didn't use a triangular grid system. I'm better with right angles for some reason. I don't know, but when I design, that's how I design. So I get the concept of the triangular grid system, which is pretty awesome. But we use a lot of, like you said, you know, twists and turns. And we're in a, 12,000 square foot warehouse, and we did 6,000 square feet last year. And of course, scare forward and...
Right.
Now, we do have a black maze. I know, you know, black maze and throughput and everything, but we're such a low number, you know, a small population right now that our line isn't getting, you know, the weight's not too bad. But as I see us growing, that may become something else. That black maze may be gone and turn that into something else. But
it also clumps up the group. What a black,
yeah,
really dark section of maze was. Allow several people to run each other, and then someone finds a way out, they take that whole group with them. So it really is trying to gap the groups and have space between them. A pitch black maze is gonna.
Yeah, we have one actor in there, and then we space our groups out pretty accordingly. Well, we have a car alarm on a motion sensor, like almost toward the end of the maze, so we know exactly where they're at when they come out. So we can have one actor slow, you know, a few actors ahead of them, slow them down or whatever. But we're still experimenting with this year too. So we'll see how it goes.
I need to get out and see your show.
Yeah. We've been out there a few weekends now. Going to expand the cemetery a little bit. There's things we didn't get done last year that we're going to add to it. And the theme's going to be the same. We're going to add more backstory to it this year. Try to bring the actors more into the storyline, because it was all kind of chaotic the first year, and they just kind of, well, I didn't enforce the story, but that's what I'm going to focus on year two.
Yeah, storyline is as much for the designer, haunted house designer, as it is for the marketing. I mean, majority of people, they don't care what the theme is, they don't care what the storyline is, but a good storyline tells you, you know, what time period the haunted house is. Is in, so no, you know, they don't. If you're doing a medieval theme, you know, castle haunted house, that doesn't, it means you really can't throw in a chainsaw somewhere, you know, unless it's steam powered or something, or you know, it doesn't.
Ooh, steam powered chainsaw.
Steampunk.
So setting the time period allows you to just make choices on, you know, what does that kitchen look like? Does it have a refrigerator? Does it have an ice box? Or does it have a, you know, a fire? So it allows, it gives you an, it's a map. It get you from point A to point F so that you know that, and it keeps you from, you know, going to a trade show and buying a Frankenstein prop and buying an alien prop and trying to put those two in the same haunted house, which, unless you have a really bizarre storyline, that's hard to make those fit. And to me, a haunted house is a movie that you walk from scene to scene. So they're trying to tell them a story. You should have in-depth characters, you know, that you know, and you don't have to bludgeon people over the head with storyline, but it value, the perceived value is greater than the people go through that if you have a current theme and you're not throwing Freddy, Jason, and Leatherface at them, you know, all in the same haunted house.
Yeah, exactly.
Besides Freddy and you know, when you can always tell when a horror character, you know, like Frankenstein or vampire, you know, Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, you know, you can always tell, you can tell when those kind of characters are really losing their ticket appeal, you know, their ability to draw, put seats in, you know, butts in the seats at the theater, because they start putting them together with each other, you know, so that was the Frankenstein.
You mean like Freddy versus Jason?
Yeah, right. So both of those were both dying, you know, character. They put them together, you know, trying to beef them up for one last movie. So I can see it coming, you know, with CGI the way it is now and all that kind of stuff. I can see it in the very near future. Freddy and Jason meet Abbott and Costello. I think that's going to be the final, you know, nail in the coffin. It'll be a comedy. It'll be great. And then we won't have to worry about Freddy or Jason anymore.
Freddy's kind of funny anyway, you think about it. He's yep. more.
He's yeah. come up belief anyway, you're right. Be a great movie. I watched somebody had done it already.
So this, Chicago Frights, Leonard, we're looking at July 29th to the 31st in Orland Park, Illinois.
Should be a great time. Hope everybody comes out to see us. It's going to be a good education. Our education is always fantastic. A lot of people bringing stuff to sell. We're looking forward to it.
Are you looking for volunteers, vendors, speakers?
Probably tight on speakers, but we can always, I mean, believe it. I'll even give away some of my slots sometimes if we get somebody really has a good topic. So absolutely. And we've got room for some workshops if somebody wants to do a make and take or something. We'd be excited about that. And we do have room for vendors. We went into a larger building, so we've got some space for vendors. If you just can't afford it, then let me know. And we've always need people to watch doors and that kind of stuff. So yeah, we can take volunteers, and that way you'll get to at least experience the show without having to pay anything. And we have some other perks too for our volunteers.
And if you have a hearse, bring it on out, huh?
Yeah, the hearse show will be on Sunday. I can't remember what time. It's like 11 on Sunday. And Corian, if you've got something that you want to sell, if you've got about a garage full of junk, the Halloween stuff they're trying to get rid of, you know, the haunted garage sale is the perfect opportunity for that. You know, a lot of our vendors at HauntCon were really disappointed at it because they didn't realize. I mean, they walked into the garage sale, which was like a feeding frenzy for the first 30 minutes or an hour, and sold everything that they brought. They just kept saying, well, I wish I'd have brought more stuff. So it's a great opportunity to buy, sell, swap, you know, and get some cash for Halloween and pick them cheap props.
So vendors are able to sell into the garage sale as well?
Sure. Oh, yeah. We give the vendors a free. It's kind of, in a way, it kind of slights in that they always kind of feel like people are holding that last 20 to 50 bucks in their pocket and waiting the garage sale. So, they get a free table in the garage sale. And then anybody that can, I think a table is $7. Maybe it's even like 35, and you have to check on that, but it's table's really cheap. It's great fun. It really is kind of funny. It's kind of a feeding frenzy and a giant flea market kind of thing, and goes like crazy for an hour or so, and then kind of dies off. It's fun. Yeah, we hope everybody will come out. It's going to be a great time. We're looking forward to HauntCon in Nashville in January, and thanks for the opportunity for me to share some thoughts on haunt design and share our dates and times with your listeners. And we should do another seminar. You kind of stopped
webinars. Yeah.
Yeah, that damn haunted attraction got in the way.
Yeah, it tends to do that, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, but I'm working on another site, Leonard. So I'm working on the website that's going to be tied in with all the seminars and everything. So as soon as I get that built, I'm going to start doubling down on it. So
keep asking me about the haunted house. It's like, I'm busy doing other stuff though. Right now I'm completing a design for a person in Australia. It's my second job in Australia. I've just signed with a guy that's going to do a thing in Egypt, and I just got a phone call today, a guy that I've been working with for a couple of weeks now, that he's got the go-ahead for a haunt that he's doing in Italy. So
wow.
It's going to be, and there's a couple other people that are talking about Loki, so this is going to be a crazy year, and there's going to be a lot of new haunts. It's a busy year, so it's going to be exciting.
It always excites me when I see other attractions popping up in foreign countries. And now, do they run those like seasonal or are they year round?
A little of both. The Egyptian guy is going to be a year round show. The Italian guy wants just October, and then the Australian person is doing going to be just October. It's got a really short run. We were really trying to figure out how to lengthen her run, and so she's not running enough days. She's still doing really good numbers, but she's got to expand her run because it's just too short. That's typical of people from overseas. They say, so you just open up for Halloween, right? It's like, no, Halloween's a month. It's not a week. Thanks, guys.
Well,
to hear from you again.
Great to hear from you, Leonard. Too.
Nice to hear your voices.
Thank you for listening to Haunt Topic Radio. Please leave a comment wherever you found this podcast. Each comment you leave will help spread the word to other haunters around the world.
This show is part of the Haunted Attractions Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at hauntedattractionspodcast.com.